What's up, this your boy Lil Duval, and check out my podcast, Conversations with Unc, on the Black Effect Podcast Network. Each and every Tuesday, Conversations with Unc podcast feature casuals and in-depth talk about ebbs and flows of life and the pursuit of happiness. Unlike my work on stage, I tap into a more serious and sensitive side to give life advice and simply offer words of encouragement, yet remind folks to never forget to laugh. Every Tuesday, listen to Conversations with Unc, hosted by Lil Duval on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Presented by AT&T. Connecting changes everything.
Let's clear out winter and clean up the lawn with Spring Black Friday savings at the Home Depot. Right now, get the Ryobi One Plus leaf blower for just $89 and make your lawn work easier with a powerful 90 miles an hour of clearing power. And with convenient online shopping, you can order on the app, pick up in store, and get outside sooner. Get your yard spring ready with the Ryobi One Plus leaf blower. Now just $89 during Spring Black Friday at the Home Depot. How doers get more done.
When you buy Kroger brand products, you feel like you're winning. That's because they offer proven quality at lower than low prices. In fact, we guarantee that you and your family will love how Kroger brand products taste, or you get your money back. So next time you're shopping for the family, look for delicious Kroger brand products because they'll make you all feel like you're winning. Shop now, in-store, or online. Kroger, fresh for everyone.
Welcome to another episode of Strictly Business, the podcast in which we speak with some of the brightest minds working in the media business today. I'm Andrew Wallenstein with Variety. I don't know if it's possible for a podcast to have a returning champion, but if it can, our guest today is the closest thing we've got. Back for an unprecedented fourth time since 2019 is Naveen Sarma, Managing Director of S&P Global Ratings, a veteran credit analyst focused on the media business. Why, you ask? Well, and there's a lot of big existential questions facing said business. Gotta bring in maximum firepower. So, fasten your seatbelts, light up whatever it is you choose to light up when you listen to podcasts, and we'll be right back to dig deep after the break.
As we wave goodbye to winter's chill, it's time to give our lawn a little love and embrace the freshness of spring. And guess what? The Home Depot's Spring Black Friday sale is here to make it all a breeze. Snag the Ryobi One Plus leaf blower for just $89 and say goodbye to tedious yard work. With a powerful 90 miles an hour of clearing power, your lawn will look spotless in a flash. And the best part? Thanks to the convenience of online shopping, you can effortlessly place your order via the app, cruise into the store for pickup, and find yourself chilling in your freshly spruced up yard in no time. Don't let this awesome deal blow away. Get your hands on the Ryobi One Plus leaf blower for only $89. Yeah, just $89. Exclusively during Spring Black Friday at the Home Depot. How doers get more done.
AI might be the most important new computer technology ever. It's storming every industry, and literally billions of dollars are being invested. So buckle up. The problem is that AI needs a lot of speed and processing power. So how do you compete without costs spiraling out of control? It's time to upgrade to the next generation of the cloud, Oracle Cloud Infrastructure, or OCI. OCI is a single platform for your infrastructure, database, application development, and AI needs. OCI has 4 to 8 times the bandwidth of other clouds, offers one consistent price instead of variable regional pricing, and of course, nobody does data better than Oracle. So now you can train your AI models at twice the speed and less than half the cost of other clouds. If you want to do more and spend less like Uber, 8x8, and Databricks Mosaic, take a free test drive of OCI at oracle.com/strategic. That's oracle.com/strategic. oracle.com/strategic.
Like many of us, you might think identity theft will never happen to you. But consider this. There's a new identity theft victim every 3 seconds in the U.S. That's over 15 million people by the end of this year, equal to the populations of New York, Los Angeles, and Chicago combined. Even worse, identity theft victims often don't even know they're victims. That's why LifeLock Identity Theft Protection alerts you to identity threats, even the ones that don't show up on a credit report, like data breaches, fraudulent bank transactions, loan and credit card applications, and crimes committed in your name. If your identity is stolen, your own dedicated LifeLock U.S.-based restoration specialist will work to fix it. LifeLock protects you in ways that you simply can't on your own. Join now and save up to 25% your first year at LifeLock.com/iHeart. That's LifeLock.com/iHeart to save up to 25%. Identity theft protection starts here.
And we're back with Naveen Sarma, a veteran credit analyst who focuses on the media business. Thank you for being with us.
Thank you for having me.
So let's get right to the biggest guessing game in Hollywood right now about who's going to acquire Paramount. I know you don't know the answer to that, but I'm just curious. As you hear lots of scenarios, you know all the names out there, Skydance, Warner Brothers Discovery. How do you think this is going to go down? I mean, what makes sense to you as you hear all the names out there?
It's a tough question.
Yeah.
Nothing particularly makes sense.
Yeah, that's for sure.
I will say I don't think it's going to be as easy as we all think initially. Mm-hmm. I think there are a number of people who would be interested in parts of the business, but I don't think there's anyone who would be particularly interested in buying the entire thing. And that complicates any transaction because you don't want to be selling off parts of the business individually. You really want to be able to have kind of a transaction that takes care of the entire thing.
Yeah. I mean, the thing is, Skydance, which seems to be the leading candidate, they are interested in the studio part of the business. They don't seem to be interested in the streamer side of things. And then you've got the Byron Allen of the world, who somewhat counterintuitively seems to be into the linear assets, which I say counterintuitive because you talk to a lot of people like yourself, a lot of people on Wall Street who seem to think that that's not the assets that have much life in the long term.
Right. It's kind of true, but you have to dig a little deeper into those assets. So, yes, we're talking about a studio in Paramount, which is over 100 years old, or mm-hmm. I guess, you know, relatively 100 years old. There's a lot of content there and a lot of IP. And then when you start digging into the television business, you've got a broadcast network in CBS, there's only four of them. And so if you want to be in linear television and you want to own one of those broadcast networks because it's got the NFL, if you look at some of the cable networks, actually the real value there in some of the cable networks is the studios affiliated and the libraries affiliated with some of those cable networks. If you think about Nickelodeon, for example, it's got a studio. It makes a lot of content. A lot of that content, whether it's SpongeBob or Blue's Clues, or my kids are old, so I'm gonna date myself very quickly. But a lot of that content is new and refreshed. And there are a number of streaming companies out there who have not done very well with children's content. This would be a good asset for somebody to own. MTV Studios is the same thing. They make movies. And so it's not necessarily the linear TV business which has value, but it's the content behind it.
And by the way, you mentioned the NFL, and that's where I think Warner Brothers Discovery makes a lot of sense. A lot of these other assets, that's a lot of duplication. I don't know why David Zaslav, for instance, wants CBS News if he's got CNN, but I'd say the biggest thing he lacks is the NFL. He doesn't have the biggest asset in all of television. But if you're Shari Redstone right now, what are you thinking?
Honestly, I don't know. I mean, the biggest question on how to decipher what ends up happening is trying to figure out what Shari Redstone wants. And I don't know what that is. It's an interesting time to try to sell a business if that's what really she intends to do. You have an election coming up at the end of the year. You might have a change of administration, which means you might have a change of regulatory, a change in regulatory environment. If you do it now, you're kind of putting yourself in front of regulators before a potential change in administration. So why not wait until later until you have greater clarity over who might you be talking to? So it's an interesting time to be doing this. My guess is there's a number, look, the media companies who might be potentially interested in buying are working through the cleaning up their balance sheets right now, right? And so if I'm them, why would you want to do a deal now? Why don't you wait until later when your balance sheets are in much better position to be able to finance a transaction?
And as we step back for that broader picture, how are the capital markets looking right now?
You know what? They're actually good for the first time in a couple of years.
Why is that?
I think people have a line of sight on potential declines in interest rates.
Mm-hmm.
I think a lot of companies, frankly, need to raise capital and they've kind of held off because they didn't know where interest rates were going to go. Even if interest rates don't go down, and look, the broader market expects interest rates to go down, at least knowing that rates aren't going to go any higher makes investors and companies interested in going out and issuing debt to finance upcoming maturities. And so that certainty has made the markets much more open. And so we've seen a lot of deals both at the high yield level, right? So bonds as well as leveraged loans have actually picked up significantly this year.
Hmm. So with that said, and you still mentioned, of course, this regulatory overhang, do you expect prior to November in the media sector or perhaps adjacent tech or telecom that we will see other deals? Do you think, I don't know, other players in the space like Disney, Comcast, Lionsgate, could we see things?
I'm skeptical about that.
Uh-huh.
I actually don't think that we're going to get resolution on a potential Paramount sale for a while, for a number of reasons. And yes, that might open up the spigot for additional M&A deals, but I think there's a lot of issues with any one of these deals that we contemplate that it would take longer for those to happen. So I'm a bit skeptical about, the spigot opening up and a lot of deals happening this year.
And yet, let's say, as it obviously looks like Trump versus Biden in 2024, a Trump presidency comes to pass. That brings certain unpredictabilities, I would imagine. Right. I think back to what happened the last time he was around. Are people necessarily, or CEOs going to want to take their chances with a Trump presidency again?
It's a great question. And you're thinking of AT&T,
uh-huh.
Time Warner. Yeah, that is an uncertainty that we'd have to deal with. Yeah.
maybe they should be doing deals now while Biden's in office. Or even with what we have seen with Biden's got a real sort of regulatory hawk in place right now. We've seen what happened in terms of how she was looking at Amazon, and especially what's gone on with a lot of the tech players right now. And as you look at that sector and what's gone on there, can we see more activity there? I mean, if the media business looked rough, my God, what's going on there?
Yeah, between Amazon and Apple and Alphabet and mm-hmm. Meta. No, I think there's a bullseye on their backs. And so I think it'd be very difficult for them to get any kind of transaction through. I will say, look, I our read on the regulatory environment in DC today is clearly it's a much higher hurdle to get a deal through regulators. Regulators are willing to go to courts and litigate, even if they don't think they're going to win. They can make it very painful for the buyer and the seller, where it takes a number of years to go through a litigation process where by the end, maybe they walk away from a transaction. I mean, it took Microsoft, Activision, a number of years to do that.
Yep.
And Microsoft was very patient. Now, Microsoft, has a balance sheet and cash flow. But if you're talking about a number of the media companies, one, they may not have the patience to put up with that. And two, the asset that they're buying might degrade significantly that by the time they get approvals, the business isn't going to be what they originally anticipated.
Got it. Well, let's move off of M&A and talk more about what else matters in the media sector. Obviously, the streaming wars. Haven't talked much about Netflix yet. They obviously put on quite a show of power coming out of 2023. And we saw in Q4, it does not look like this year is going to be, they are not going to look any weaker in 24. How do you see the streaming wars shaping up as Netflix does not look like they are losing any momentum?
No, aren't the streaming wars kind of over
at this point? Yeah, I mean, maybe we should retire the phrase at this point.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, look, Netflix has done an amazing job of building out a business and, you know, and getting to the scale and the profitability that they have where everyone else is chasing that and will continue to chase that. Having said that, look, they did benefit for a number of years not having competition, and that got them to the 260, 270 million subscribers they have. But the markets also gave them a pass being unprofitable, no cash flow for the longest amount of time. And so in a way, the media companies, the legacy media companies, are a bit disadvantaged because all of a sudden we've decided to pivot, not we, but just generally the market has decided to pivot away from subscribers to now you need to be profitable. And so they didn't get the luxury of time that Netflix got to build their business, you know, without the pressures of profitability. Having said that, that's not taking away anything from Netflix. They are, when I talk to people and I ask, you know, what is the streaming service you want to have, you need to have? It's always Netflix. They've become the anchor. They're becoming the Xerox of copying.
Yeah. I mean, clearly. Now, if you're Bob Iger, what do you do with that? I mean, clearly, they've got a bundling strategy coming together with Hulu. He's got plenty of other headaches to worry about within Disney as well. If you're Bob Iger right now, how do you deal with that reality?
So, look, Disney's further along than all those other peers. And as they like to remind me all the time, Disney Plus is not even a four-year-old service, right? It launched in 2019 in November. And so it's a relatively immature business. So they say patience. Yeah, I get that. But they do have the scale. They do have the assets, whether it's Disney Plus or Hulu or, you know, whenever they launch their flagship DTC ESPN service, to be a player, a keeper, you know, a company of significant scale and importance in the streaming world. And so of all of the media companies that we're probably going to talk about, they're the ones I'm least worried about because they're further along than everybody else. They hopefully will get to break even, cash flow break even this year. And then given their scale, and if they stay disciplined on the cost side, profitability should you know, start to ramp up with this company.
I mean, profitability, I think, is sort of the name of the game right now in this space. How do you see the financial health of the companies that are in this space now that we're moving into year two and of sort of the race to profitability? And this matters a lot in terms of what you look at in terms of credit ratings and such.
Yeah. Yeah. It's interesting. We thought we would come into this. We recognized that we were going to come into this kind of a cycle back in 2018. That there were going to be investments in streaming that were going to result in losses. And at some point, you were going to get to an inflection point and then start to see losses decline and then eventually get the profitability. And we're along that path pretty far for some companies, you know, for companies like either a Peacock or Comcast and Peacock or Paramount, we're further behind and they're kind of hitting that inflection point kind of this year. So, you know, cash flow is really important for us. So we're spending a lot of time thinking about the cash flow impact on this business. As the losses have declined and the companies have cut back on things like SG&A and clearly on content spending, that should help the profitability and the cash flow out of that business. What they essentially need to do, though, is to grow the business faster than linear TV is declining. And that might be the biggest surprise over the last 4 years, which is linear TV, we thought had more legs. The impact and the decline has been far faster and more significant than we thought. But that's kind of the race these companies are all playing, is can they get streaming profitable, you know, ahead of the pace of the declines of linear television?
And obviously cord cutting continues apace. The thing that I'm wondering about is we've seen some data points in recent months about peak TV and clearly the peak TV era is over. Clearly, the strikes of 2023 have allowed these companies to reset how much they are spending on content after a number of years of spending like drunk sailors. I just wonder how, you know, whether what 2024 is going to look like in terms of that spending, whether they're going to be spending an appropriate amount going forward or whether it might actually be too little after, you know, have they conditioned the audiences to expect a certain amount, a surplus, and now it's going to be too little?
Yeah, it's a great question. I don't even think we're going to get that answer in 24 because the, you know, the after effects of the strike are still rolling through the ecosystem. And so I wouldn't call this year a normalized level of spending. It's probably next year.
Yeah.
We'll see how consumers react to getting less content from their streaming services. You know, I think certainly this year we're going to see a box office that's going to be down from last year because there are no movies. And so, you know, I think you're going to see a lot of experimentation from the media companies trying to figure out what's the right amount of spending and what's the right pace of growth of spending. And that I don't think we're really going to see that until next year.
We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, more with Naveen Sarma, Managing Director of S&P Global Ratings.
As we wave goodbye to winter's chill, it's time to give our lawn a little love and embrace the freshness of spring. And guess what? The Home Depot's Spring Black Friday sale is here to make it all a breeze. Snag the Ryobi One Plus leaf blower for just $89 and say goodbye to tedious yard work. With a powerful 90 miles an hour of clearing power, your lawn will look spotless in a flash. And the best part? Thanks to the convenience of online shopping, you can effortlessly place your order via the app, cruise into the store for pickup, and find yourself chilling in your freshly spruced up yard in no time. Don't let this awesome deal blow away. Get your hands on the Ryobi One Plus leaf blower for only $89. Yeah, just $89. Exclusively during Spring Black Friday at the Home Depot. How doers get more done.
Had enough of those supplements that leave you feeling nothing? Symbiotica is your solution to great-tasting, all-natural supplements that actually work. Crafted with premium plant-based ingredients, their products have no seed oils, fillers, or toxins. Try them out and actually feel the difference today. Visit Symbiotica.com and use code IHEART for 15% off plus free shipping on your subscription order. Again, that's 15% off plus free shipping on your subscription order. Go to Symbiotica.com, Symbiotica.com.
Spectrum One is a big deal. You get Spectrum Internet with the most reliable internet speeds, free advanced Wi-Fi for enhanced security and privacy, and a free Spectrum Mobile Unlimited line with nationwide 5G included, all while saving big. For the big speed, big reliability, and big savings you want, get Spectrum One. Just $49.99 a month for 12 months. Visit spectrum.com/bigdeal for full details. Offer subject to change. Valid for qualified residential customers only. Service not available in all areas. Restrictions apply.
And we are back with Naveen Sarma, Managing Director of S&P Global Ratings, a veteran analyst who has been watching the media business for a long time. Lots to ask him about. We were just talking about the strikes. I was curious if you were nervous about the potential for yet another strike this year. There is the possibility of IATSE. Could we see yet another disruption that could be a setback that is pretty significant? And I mean, could this industry afford another disruption like we saw last year?
Yeah, one of the things I wanted to learn coming out to LA was to take the temperature of that and get an answer to that. And what I'm hearing is the industry took a big hit from the strikes in 23, and there's no appetite to go through a similar exercise in 24. So I'm optimistic that there's a settlement on both sides. Like, both sides got hurt from the strike. whether it's content creators or the studios. And so I think that there's no appetite to go through that exercise again. So I'm optimistic that there's a resolution before there's a strike.
Mm-hmm. Although just because there's an intent for resolution doesn't mean that there will actually be a resolution. That's something I've certainly learned in my own years out here watching these things. Sometimes they can't be averted, but we'll see. And I think that's something that's going to be obviously coming together in a number of months. Something else, as we were talking about the streaming wars, that I think is going to be apparent this year is advertising tiers and what that's going to mean with consumers. Do you think this is going to be something that is going to be material to the companies that are putting them out there? Something that's going to be well received by consumers. And what's your take?
Yeah, I think, well, we'll see how consumers react. I mean, part of the play of putting an ad tier out is lower price. And, you know, one of our concerns for the economy this year is consumers have been spending like drunken sailors for the last couple of years. That money will eventually start to dry up. We think that'll happen sometime this year. So putting out an ad tier, you know, gives an option to consumers if they're stressed financially and they need to, you know, reevaluate their budgets. Having said that, the ad tier is a very good idea. Look, advertisers have been the slowest to move off of television. Audiences left a long time ago, other than for the NFL or for other sports. But yet advertisers continue to stay on television for a number of reasons. One, because they understood the way that television ratings impacted their business. And so that, you know, the devil they know, they know versus the devil they don't know. But more importantly, they weren't getting impressions from streaming that justified the spending. So they spent it on television, they got make goods, but now they're starting to, and this is why I think advertising has been soft for television. It's not we're in an ad recession, but advertisers have moved dollars off of television, linear television, onto other platforms. There are now other options here. And streaming is clearly one of them, especially as these companies have all launched these ad services, these ad tier services, and they're getting scale. And that has been a problem thus far, that they haven't had enough scale. And so when you go and, you know, you go to a streaming service and you say, I want to watch your show, how many times have you seen the same ad multiple times? There's not enough impressions.
Too much. Oh, yeah. God.
There's not enough impressions, and there's certainly not enough unique impressions. That should change now that you have a number of companies launching services, you know, ad tier services. Although, let's be honest, Disney doesn't have that many subscribers. Netflix really doesn't have that many subscribers on the ad tier. So they need to really grow that quickly. One of the things that Disney can do now that they have an agreement with Charter is if they replicate that with other cable companies, they can now put Disney Plus, you know, the ad tier in front of a lot of people who have linear television. Amazon, what Amazon did last week by basically saying, you know, everybody who's got an Amazon Prime subscription is now on the ad tier. They went from having nobody or, you know, very few subscribers seeing advertising to the potential for their entire base in the United States, other than those who, you know, now pay the extra money to not get it, to now get advertising. And so suddenly advertisers have the opportunity to actually get large impressions through streaming. And, you know, that's a good thing for the overall ecosystem, for each individual media company. They're going to lose money because some of that money is going to get drained onto an Amazon platform. And so, you know, it's a good thing for the ecosystem, but some of the media companies, clearly you're not going to all benefit from that.
Clearly. I'm also wondering what other trends you think are going to be significant to the streaming space this year. I, for one, went into this year wondering whether we would see the same number of competitors even in the streaming space. It feels like we've been waiting for a shakeout for quite some time. And maybe this is part of the M&A conversation we were having before. But do you think we're going to see by the end of 24 the same number of players?
I would hope not. I mean this without M&A. I think there needs to be consolidation. I mean, if you think about just the price, what consumers are paying, the ad, if you add up the price for all of the ad tiered services, it's about $65. Mm-hmm. If you go ad free, it's over $125 today. That's a big bill. It's as expensive as linear television.
Right.
I think consumers are perpetually confused by where they can find content. I think they would love to watch. They would love to have somebody aggregate it. Laugh if you, you know, laugh.
Gee, where have I heard of that model?
Exactly.
Before?
We're going back to that. But I think they would like to see aggregation of all of this. And here's the challenge for that to happen. I think we would all like to see that. But I think the challenges here are multiple. One is who owns the customer, right? I don't think any of the media companies, now that they're actually seeing data from the customers, wants to either share the data or necessarily, you know, share the customer with whoever is the aggregator there. Who does the billing? Who does the customer care? Does, you know, Netflix have to share its data with the aggregator? Does Disney get to see the Netflix data? I think all of these things need to get resolved before you can go that route. Having said that, I mean, who are our aggregators? We've got Roku, we've got Amazon, we've got the cable companies. So there's a number of players who would be interested in aggregating it. So, and clearly customers and consumers want to see that as well. But we've got a lot of impediments the way that happened.
That is true. And we've certainly seen some degree of bundling, which I guess is sort of some sort of midpoint between the aggregators and the individual players. Any momentum expected there? Lots of talk, not that much walk.
Yeah. I mean, I have a Roku box. Mm-hmm. And trying to explain to, you know, my kids and my wife how to navigate that, where you got different tiles and how do you go from here to here. It's not the optimum solution. And I think consumers don't particularly like that. They would like, you know, what they used to have, which is linear television type bundles where you get a guide and you can find everything by just a simple search.
Mm-hmm. Well, my God, there would be about 50 more questions if you were to get onto every single trend of note here. Any one last prediction, trend to watch that we have not touched on that is macro in this business that you feel like keep an eye on this year? Have you spent any time yet with Apple's Vision Pro, for instance? Any thoughts there?
I haven't. I don't know if I want to show, what is it, $3,500, $3,900?
$3,500?
Yeah, I have not, so.
Okay. Have you spent any time with, AI and what that could be meaning for the media business at this time?
I've spent a lot of time. Yeah, actually, that's a good question. Okay, I'm thinking a lot about that, which is the strikes are interesting because of how front and center AI was in both the writers' discussion as well as the actors' discussion. I think how it was resolved was good for the industry, right? The writers can use AI, but they aren't forced to use it. And there's rules around how they get pay and recognition and things like that. I think really what's really important is that you have a set of rules in the United States, copyright rules and laws, that basically protect content. And so I think at the end of the day, you can go and try a bunch of things with AI. And we've got companies who are now, I read an article about some companies who were basically replicating movies without the studio's permission. At the end of the day, the rule of law, protection of copyright, is the most important part in this country. And so AI can be a tool that can improve the process and improve content creation. But as long as the rules are enforced through the laws, I think AI isn't a threat to content creation.
Well, we'll see how that prediction holds up in the future. It is very early days. And I feel like this conversation is just scratching the surface in terms of so many different trends to watch in a year that is going to be very, very interesting in the media space. And so glad to have you here, Naveen, to get your insights. Thanks again for your fourth appearance on this podcast since 2019.
Thank you very much for having me again.
Thanks for listening. Be sure to leave us a review at Apple Podcasts and Amazon Music. We love to hear from listeners. Please go to Variety.com to sign up for the free weekly Strictly Business newsletter. And don't forget to tune in next week for another episode of Strictly Business.
My simple solution to the problem was remove people from the scene and help them feel safer.
In response to attacks against Asian Americans, Maddie Park raised over $250,000 to donate cab rides to the Asian community.
There is so much more work to be done. We really need to come together and tackle this issue as a community.
Support the Asian community. Learn how at lovehasnolabels.com. Brought to you by Love Has No Labels and the Ad Council.
As the number one audio company, iHeartMedia gives you access to all. Every audience, live conversations, trusted influencers, and the insights and data you need to grow. iHeartMedia is your access company. Go to iHeartResults.com for more.
The world is full of magic and wonder, if you know where to look. And I'm obsessed with looking for it. I'm Simon Sinek, and I host a podcast called A Bit of Optimism. Each week, I have a short conversation with someone who inspires me or teaches me something about life, leadership, and other curious things. I hope you'll join me on the journey. Listen to A Bit of Optimism on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.